Tomorrow, February 26th, marks the 100th anniversary of the establishment of Grand Canyon National Park by President Woodrow Wilson. But what is the future of Grand Canyon? We speak to journalist Stephen Nash, who is the author of the new book Grand Canyon for Sale, Public Lands versus Private Interests in the Era of Climate Change. Nash is a visiting senior research scholar at the University of Richmond. He highlights America's national parks and forests, monuments and wildernesses, and the tens of billion dollars in potential economic losses if we fail to keep our national promise made when the whole park system was created to, quote, conserve their scenery and natural and historic objects and wildlife. Again, the name of the new book is Grand Canyon for Sale, and we welcome Stephen Nash to the roundtable this morning. Stephen, thank you very much for being with us.
And thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful to have you on the program. Give us a sense of, when it comes to an anniversary like this, of what do you think we should keep in mind when we think about the Grand Canyon and what it has provided us for the past 100 years, and also about what we think about when we think of its future.
It's a great occasion, the 100th anniversary of the creation of this extraordinary world-class national park. Probably all of them are easy to classify as world-class. The park is almost eternal, but there are a whole lot of changes moving around all of our national park system. And the backstory is extremely important for their next 100 years. Grand Canyon's a long ways off. You know, we are used to surprises these days, but I was surprised to learn that 20 million people in the state of New York visited national parks just last year. And according to the Park Service, the economic effect of that was $701 million. So while we're talking about Grand Canyon, let's keep in mind that there's this whole national park system, and 300 million people visited all of our parks in a single year last year.
So the point you are making in the book, though, it deals very much with the future of the park, and of course it focuses on Grand Canyon, but it looks really, the question could be the case to all of our parks and the possibility of losing them.
It's the natural systems in those parks that the parks were created to preserve, along with the beautiful scenery. Part of what makes the scenery is the plants and animals that live there, and we wanted to preserve these natural systems that were disappearing fast from the landscape 100 years ago. Public lands that the park system is part of make up, incredibly, a third of our national landscape. That's about 1 million square miles. That's the national forests and wildlife refuges and wilderness areas and national rangelands. So they represent a wonderful opportunity for the future of Grand Canyon and for the future of all our national parks as climate change begins to press on those natural systems.
You make the point in the book that there are many, many environmental issues to talk about when we talk about Grand Canyon, but climate change really trumps a lot of those other issues.
Climate change is the overarching issue. There are a lot of things that we need to take care of, even as our great-grandparents did 100 years ago when the park system was established. You know, it was a fight then. We need private enterprise to be the engine of our national economy, but what was decided by Teddy Roosevelt and the rest of the nation, including Congress back then, was, look, there's a place for everything, and we need places for the preservation of our wonderful natural environment. What's been happening generally is that private interests are beginning to look at these places as their private piggy bank. We need to consolidate public lands, all of them, and protect all of them as a hedge against climate change. And instead, there's a strong political movement to break them up and sell them off for oil and gas drilling and logging and mining.
I mean, you spend four chapters in the book examining cattle ranching on public lands. Talk a little bit about the impact that this has on a park like Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon's plants and animals, and those in every other national park, as the climate shifts, are going to need to migrate to cooler climates, not all of them, but very many of them, are going to be heading north. That's an envelope, a kind of sort of a climatic envelope that they can survive within. And there's this fantastic opportunity throughout much of the United States, especially in the West, in the public lands. So if they move out of Grand Canyon, they'll have national forests and national rangelands to move into. Other plants and animals to the south will be moving toward Grand Canyon. The problem about grazing is that on tens of millions of acres, we have left these arid lands open to cattle grazing. Unfortunately, the cattle, who only represent 1% of our national supply of beef, those cattle are very destructive of those lands. We have been very determinedly not paying attention to that. If we have cattle grazing and mining and logging and gas drilling, the animals and plants that need to be migrating through those lands are not going to be able to do it. We can't have it all. We can look to many other places for natural resources and for beef and for our hamburgers. We don't have to be looking at public lands.
You're talking about 328,000 square miles of public land. The point you make in the book that cows are an enormous part of the Grand Canyon story, even though there aren't cattle in Grand Canyon.
That's right. Actually, there are cattle in some national parks. They're there for sort of photogenic reasons, and that's fine. There are also cattle in our wilderness areas, and they don't really belong there. It's just a kind of a legacy. It has to do with our national mythology. When we look in the mirror as Americans, you know, we see rootin' tootin' cowboys, and all that's fine. The consequences of cattle grazing, though, are erosion, enormous dust storms, and a destruction of the plant life, that all of the wildlife that could sustain itself in those areas can't, because there's just not enough to eat when they're competing with cattle.
One of the things you touched on this a moment ago, but one of the things you keep on coming back to is the idea of money and the money that is to be made, the money, of course, that is in politics. And when it comes to the environment and the Grand Canyon, and you look at all of the variables, what do you do? What are the possible solutions of getting money out of that equation and ultimately preserving what we have in that national park?
That's an excellent question. Let me set the table just briefly. 70% of Americans, and that includes both Democrats and Republicans, it's not a partisan issue, believe that Congress is for sale. It's for sale to people who are willing to donate gobs of money to finance political campaigns. We all know this. We all bemoan it. It really can change. It affects our plans for our natural areas. It affects everything else in American life. We've sort of lost faith in the political system because we think it's run by people who can pay to have influence in it. That's true at the national park level, in the national forest. It's true in that grazing issue that you talked about. It is not difficult to connect with any of these issues. If you go online and put in campaign finance reform or put in public lands protection, you know how it is with these browsers. They'll find 4,000 results for you in a millionth of a second. It's not hard to connect with people who are working hard on these issues. It's a matter of voting, of course. It's a matter of getting in touch with your congressional delegation, of course. It's letting them know that this isn't a right-wing or a left-wing kind of issue. Americans agree on what's wrong there in Congress, and Americans agree at 80 or 90% about protecting our natural public lands and especially our national parks. So what you can do is plan to do what our great-grandparents did when they created this wonderful legacy for us. You got to get into the fight.
One of the things that I find interesting in the book is that you read the book and you think, okay, this is what is happening. Although you wrote this book before the the Trump administration even took over. So you have to wonder where we are now. And is it just getting progressively worse, or are the downsides that you illustrate in the book really coming true?
Well, the book came out just after the Trump administration had been in office for a short while. And and so it includes a taste of what the present administration had in mind. The way that has played out very recently is in the first 2 years of the Trump administration, oil and gas drilling on public lands has tripled. In the in December, the Trump administration decreed that there will be 30% more logging on public lands. The Trump administration has been has presided over and pushed for the largest rollback of public lands protection in the nation's history, really vandalizing our national monuments. So that's the way things have played out in the year or year and a half since the book came out.
So overall, where does your optimism lie?
My optimism lies in the fact that the conversation is changing. Just by coincidence, in the last 20 hours, the United States Senate voted by something like 96-4 in favor of our Land and Water Conservation Act, funding that. Part of that package of bills that was enormously bipartisan in the Senate, part of that package of bills protected some public lands. It's a case of Congress beginning to recognize just how much public support there is for protecting these natural systems. It's very likely that the House is going to approve that same bill. What happens when it gets to the president, that's anybody's guess. In the last 2 years, there's been enormous building public interest in climate change, and 70% of Americans, another poll, but 70% of them say that they are worried about climate change now. That's much higher than it was even 2 years ago. It may be a kind of an indirect blessing that the extremism of the Trump administration has brought into the public conversation. It's not going to be long until no politician will be able to deny climate change without being laughed off the stage.
Well, the book is fascinating and a lot, obviously, to think about. The Stephen Nash. Stephen Nash is our guest. The name of the book is Grand Canyon for Sale, Public Land versus Private Interests in the Era of Climate Change. Stephen, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.